It's very much a groundbreaking resolution. It's very forward-leaning, if you will, and very much reframing the whole debate about what peace building is today, the role of the United Nations, the importance of partnerships with regional organizations, with the World Bank, other actors, governments, civil society. And it frames a new way of working for the United Nations as well as member states here in New York.
For the ordinary people who have lived in conflict countries, peace building for them is what happens after a peace agreement has been signed, when countries are transitioning from war to peace. Is that still the thinking of this new architecture? Is it still along those lines?
In fact, for many years, peace building was very much as something that member states and the United Nations organized themselves around, preventing the recurrence of violence after wars, after civil wars. And so peace building was very much relegated to something that was in the realm of post-conflict activities. I think the historical resolution actually brings the concept of conflict prevention as something that this organization was fundamentally established to do. It's the core function of the United Nations is first and foremost to prevent wars, to prevent violent conflicts from actually happening. And so what these two resolutions will do is actually give new meaning to the concept of prevention. Prevention before a conflict, managing and trying to prevent the conflict from escalating, but also the aspects of post-conflict interventions, which is about avoiding the recurrence.
With regards to the Peace Building Fund, you've mentioned that it's helped in many post-conflict countries. What is going to become of this fund in the new architecture?
This is a very strategic instrument that allows precisely the United Nations to integrate its peace and security elements of its work with development, which is extremely important also to sustain the peace-building efforts, as well as promoting human rights. This is a fund that has had over 54 countries contributing to the fund. But we are running out of funds. Voluntary contributions have not been coming in a predictable and sustained manner as it was meant to happen. And therefore, we are hoping that the pledging conference that will be organized in September is going to be able to recapitalize it, because we are increasingly getting a lot of demands from many countries that require our support. And we are unfortunately unable to respond. So we are now starting to accumulate more demands that we're able to respond to. And yet, this fund has proven its utility. It has worked in a very strategic manner with other, for example, regional banks, in particular the World Bank, the African Development Bank. It has served as an instrument to incentivize and support donors to go into very high-risk areas, for example, the cantonment project that we have in the north of Mali. These were seen at the time to be very high-risk initiatives, but having initiated this activity, we have been able to do what we call a proof of concept and allowed other donors to come behind the initial investment of the Peace Building Fund. So we need now to mobilize sustained attention and support to this fund that has, as many reviews have said, is one of the most effective and efficient funds within the United Nations system. And important also to mention is that this pledging conference is going to be hosted not only by some of the top contributors to the Peace Building Fund, but equally important that the beneficiary countries of this fund are also going to be very much part of mobilizing the political support, the financial support, the programmatic support, because they have seen the impact, they have felt the results, and they see the utility and the value added of this very powerful instrument to bring the UN to deliver as one on peace building on the ground.